Hi, I'm Ashley Gallagher from Pharmacy Times, and you're listening to Pharmacy Focus. The Pharmacy Times Pharmacy Focus podcast provides the latest industry news and information, thought leader insight, clinical updates, patient counseling tools, and innovative solutions for the everyday practice and business of pharmacy. On this episode of Pharmacy Focus, Harsha Rajasima, founder and CEO of Jiva Informatics Solutions, discusses the importance of representation of women and minority groups in clinical trials and how decentralized clinical trials could be used to help address the gender disparity. So to just start, this year is the 30-year mark for the Revitalization Act of 1993, which states that women and minority groups are to be included in clinical research. Although we have seen a vast increase since the Act, we still have a long way to go. Could you start by giving listeners a brief overview about the history of women in clinical trials?
Sure, Ashley. Thank you for having me today on this podcast. Absolutely. You know, this has been a long-standing issue in the life science industry, this lack of disparity between women and men in clinical trials, where women and other LGBTQ community are underrepresented in clinical trials significantly compared to male counterparts. And the main reasons that or arguments that have been for this is one, women particularly of childbearing potential, which is a majority of the women population, have two things. One is variation in their hormonal levels and hormonal activity due to the menstrual cycles and other hormonal activity that's unique to women compared to men. And so men and women are not equal in that sense. And there is concern in the clinical trial drug development process that these hormonal fluctuations during the course of the clinical trial could skew the results in various types of drug trials. And that's one big concern. The second concern or reason why this disparity exists is because of the safety of both the woman as well as the potential children that may be born or yet to be born. And since it's not always easy to know when conceptions might occur and the unknown side effects of the drug being tested in a clinical trial on both the potential mother and the baby to be born. That's the second major concern is around safety. The third is more of logistical issues which put women at a disadvantage than men in many instances, particularly women who are homemakers and who are who don't work outside of the house or need a convenient way to participate without much logistical burden of traveling to investigator sites, which may be located far away from where they live. For example, in Boston or Houston or Bay Area. And that becomes difficult for many women who are unable to travel due to family and childcare obligations and other domestic responsibilities. And so if these three issues have remained, main reasons why women continue to be underrepresented in clinical trials.
So what are some ways to help alleviate these disparities for more equal distribution of diversity in clinical trials, not only for women, but other ethnic and racial groups?
Great question, Ashley. There are a number of things that could be done to make it better. Number one, there is legislation and laws and act by the government, such as this Revitalization Act of 1993, and also the regulatory guidelines and guidances that the FDA and other regulatory agencies are putting out around racial and ethnic diversity plan, which is now FDA is requiring biopharmaceutical medical device companies to include a plan in their submissions to the FDA, how they plan to ensure proper representation or proportional representation of women, racial, ethnic, and other underserved communities in that particular clinical trial for that particular disease area, and so on. So that's something that's always a good, stick that the regulators use to enforce or ensure fair and inclusive clinical trials. That always helps. Now, the industry also has always had good intentions. It's just that they're overly concerned around safety of these women and also the bias and due to the hormonal activity and other reasons that I mentioned. But given the new guidances by the FDA and the legislations, that certainly can add a lot of push. The second is lack of proper inclusive software and data platforms for patients to participate in a clinical trial from the convenience of their home as much as possible without requiring travel every single time. And that also next generation of software integrated digital platforms, which enable, for example, women to participate from the comfort of their kitchen counters. And this whole notion of decentralized clinical trials could really help address these problems.
So what are decentralized clinical trials, and how can they help to address gender disparities in clinical trials?
Great question, Ashley. So decentralized clinical trials are essentially clinical trials that are conducted not necessarily restricted only to the brick and mortar hospitals or clinics where patients are expected to show up in person every single visit during a clinical trial. So a clinical trial might typically run for, say, on an average 12 to 18 months. And depending on whether it's a phase one, phase two, or phase three, they can be a bit shorter or longer than that. And during this period, the pharma companies working with the doctor or physician investigators are trying to understand the safety and efficacy of this investigational medicinal product on these patient participants in clinical trials. Now, historically, majority or almost all of the clinical trial visits have been required to be in person, where the patient has to show up in the clinic, say once a month or twice a month or whatever the frequency might be, as per the specific clinical trial protocol. Now, decentralized trials, which kind of gained a lot of momentum during the COVID-19 pandemic when travel was restricted and there were safety concerns due to infections and so on, patients needed a safe way to continue to participate in clinical trials, and pharma companies and physician researchers needed a way to continue to maintain the continuity of clinical trials without requiring in-person visits. And so decentralized trials became more common, where patients can participate from the comfort of their home, either entirely or partly, where some visits where patients may absolutely be required to go to the clinic, they continue to do so. In other instances, the physicians may send a nurse to the patient's home to collect, say, draw a blood sample or perform certain assessments at the patient's home itself. And in other cases, the patient completes their task in the clinical trial through a televisit or a video visit or through a questionnaire-based assessment or maintaining the log of symptoms or medication adherence or forgetting a medication as part of the clinical trial on electronic diaries. without having to physically travel. So those all these models collectively are called decentralized or hybrid clinical trials, because what we are seeing is a majority of clinical trials today are hybrid in the sense they are not entirely decentralized, in that there will be some visits where patients do still have to visit the site at least a few times. And there are some activities that are done with the patient being at home. And so those are decentralized or hybrid clinical trials.
What other benefits do decentralized clinical trials have besides closing the gender disparity gap? Yeah.
A great question, Ashley. In fact, decentralized trials offer the potential for huge benefits to all stakeholders involved in clinical trials, which is the biopharmaceutical or medical device sponsor, the physician investigators, patients who participate in these trials, all of them. The biggest one is access. You know, because historically, the clinical trials were entirely 100% brick and mortar or in person, only patients who lived within 50-mile radius of these hospital sites or academic medical centers in Boston, Houston, Bay Area, Florida, and certain hot pockets, only they got to participate in clinical trials. They had the undue advantage, whereas 95 or more percentage of the Americans who lived away from these hot pockets had no, were at a disadvantage, and hence had very small, chance that they could participate in these clinical trials. Decentralized trials changes that. They offer people, irrespective of their gender, race, ethnicity, geographic location, socioeconomic status, all of them to be have a chance of participating, because every visit need not be in-person visit, especially if that is true, where there's only a one or two visits that are in person and most of the study can be completed remotely. The benefit of decentralized trials significantly skyrockets for patients in particular who are in need to access clinical trials because the standard of care is not good enough. And for biopharmaceutical companies, it gives them faster access to patients, especially if both men and women can participate and people from all over the country or globally can participate, they can enroll patients much faster. Otherwise, patient recruitment has been the number one barrier that makes clinical trials very inefficient. And even 30% of clinical trials have historically been terminated because of lack of patient enrollment.
So what are some considerations that investigators should consider before adopting decentralized clinical trials?
So investigators have a major influence if it is an investigator-initiated clinical trial. But for most sponsored clinical trials, sponsored by a biopharmaceutical company or a medical device company, the sponsor has a protocol that is written by the principal investigator at the sponsor level. And that protocol has to be written taking into consideration the various logistical aspects in making sure decentralized clinical trial aspects are implemented in the protocol. That is, how many visits can be remote and what assessments and activities can be completed remotely without affecting the quality, safety, or efficacy of the trial and the reliability of the results. Because ultimately, the data quality has to meet the expectations of the regulators, such as FDA. And so the protocol is written usually by somebody at the sponsor level. And so the investigators often receive a protocol where they may not have a lot of influence to change. They can certainly push back or provide feedback after they receive the protocol, but many times those changes don't occur easily. And it's a long process for making protocol amendments. And so the investigator teams need to make sure the sponsor is providing them with the right kind of software and tools to implement and execute those decentralized clinical trials, which includes the software for capturing data, clinical data remotely and electronically, reliably, as well as performing certain remote assessments, whether they need additional staff who are trained in using these software tools, and identifying software vendors potentially, which the investigator sites may want to adopt for televisits and video visits and remote assessments, and even nurses who are willing to visit the patient's homes, who may be far more than 50 miles away from the investigator site once in whenever the protocol requires them. So those are some additional considerations, as well as ensuring that the expectations of the regulator is the same, whether it's a traditional clinical trial or a decentralized trial, in terms of quality, compliance, and expectation of clinical validity of the data captured and patient safety. And so when patients are far away, ensuring that patients are safe during the course of the clinical trial and have a communication channel established so they can reach the patient or family member by email or texting or phone call and alternative communication channels, just in the case that the patient may have a need to contact the site or the site may need to contact the patient.
More broadly, how does increasing diversity in clinical trials help to lead to more effective treatments for both common diseases and rare diseases?
Great question, Ashley. In fact, many of the treatments that have been approved in the past have proven to be effective only on certain population segments and not on other populations, particularly gender-based. Since that's a topic of focus, I'll say several cardiovascular, cholesterol, or hypertension drugs seem to work better in men and not very effective in women, just because women were not included during the clinical trials. And hence, these drugs that are approved for the general population need to be tested on the general population or a population that is representative of the general population. And so these decentralized trials, as they become more inclusive and include various racial, ethnic, social, economic, and other diversity parameters during the clinical development, are more likely to be effective and helpful for the general target population for that particular drug or device being tested. So that's better science and good for the general public and for everyone involved. It's just good science.
How could closing the gap of gender, racial, and ethnic disparities impact and enhance drug development?
Ashley, I think this is similar to the previous question, right? In terms of having this inclusive, diverse, equitable access to all participants, irrespective of their geographic location, race, ethnicity, and socioeconomic parameters, is good for the society, good for the drug being tested so that we know which population it really works well, and so that the regulators can only approve the drug for the target population. You know, sometimes there may be certain diseases which disproportionately affect, say, Caucasian population, for example, cystic fibrosis, or there may be certain diseases such as sickle cell anemia, which may affect Middle East, Africa, Asia, and certain other parts of the world, but not so much the Caucasian population. And so different diseases have varying levels of prevalence in different race, ethnicity, and genders even. Obviously, women's health-related clinical trial will disproportionately enroll women compared to men, and vice versa. But diseases that affect genders almost equally should have equal representation of both genders or all genders who might be affected by that particular medical indication that's being tested for. And so It needs to be tempered. It's not that all clinical trials should have all people equally represented. It has to be proportional to the prevalence of that particular disease among the target population.
Lastly, is there anything else that you would like to add about the centralized clinical trials, gender disparities, and racial and ethnic disparities?
So thank you for asking that, Ashley. You know, for the last 23 years, I have spent my time as a genomics data scientist coming from a computational biology PhD background, having worked for National Institutes of Health, FDA, as a consultant, and for the healthcare life science industry. I have this whole mission is very personal to me, just because I had a child with a rare genetic disease and a younger brother with diabetes, both passed away at a very young age. And so that continues to inspire me. And I'm sure a lot of people in the healthcare life science space have such personal stories, which make this very meaningful endeavor. And this is a very important point in time in the evolution of how clinical trials were conducted and how they are changing for better with the hybrid and decentralized clinical trials. And that takes both the technology innovation as well as education and awareness and training. And so I'm excited to be a social entrepreneur in the space, impacting both sides, both through technology innovation as well as the nonprofit patient education and collaborations, and so on. So thank you for having me today. And I look forward to many more conversations on this and other topics.
Thanks for listening to Pharmacy Focus. Stay tuned for our next episode, where we will be joined by another key opinion leader in the pharmacy space.